You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 342 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk The Riddler Year 1 number 5, Batman The Brave and the Bold number 2, Tim Drake Robin number 10, Green Arrow number 3, Action Comics 1056, Detective Comics 1073, and Superman and Lois Season 3 Episode 12, Injustice. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright Cletus, first up for DC news. At San Diego Comic-Con, DC has officially announced Justice League vs. Godzilla vs. Kong, a new 7-issue event series that will begin in October. The series will be written by Brian Buccellato with art by Christian Deuce and colorist Luis Guerrero.
That's nice. I don't care. I'm sure some people will pick up the book, Drew, but I don't know. I wonder how big of a draw that kind of book is going to be. I feel like that has kind of lost its luster a little bit. The big, like, kind of, you know, DC character meets some famous movie character thing. I don't feel like that's has the same demand that it once had.
Maybe. I think it might be a little
but
bigger.
But I could be wrong. I don't know.
I think it might be a little bigger than you think. There's quite a few Godzilla and Kong fans out there. I'm not big into the monsters, so I'm not that excited about that. But I know there's people out there that are, you know, especially people my age who grew up with more of those movies and stuff. So, all right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. Also announced at San Diego Comic-Con by writers Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing with art by Robert Carey is a 12-issue Outsiders miniseries with a team led by Batwoman and Luke Fox as super archaeologists. In this miniseries, the team will be exploring uncharted territories of the DC universe.
I think it has the potential to be an interesting premise, Drew, especially because Luke Fox has not been, I mean, he's sort of been around with the with his brother in the other Batman title, but very, very pushed to the side. So nice to get him in something actively again. We'll see. I mean, again, it could be interesting.
Yeah, and the last time we saw Batwoman was in Robin Tim Drake, which we're actually going to be talking about today. But we haven't seen much of Batwoman either.
Again, other than in the Tim Drake title, that's the most recent thing I can think of that she's been in.
Yeah, so nothing major recently with her, so. All right, and for our final bit of DC news, DC announced Batman City of Madness, a 3-issue Black Label series from writer and artist Christian Ward. The series, which goes on sale October 10th, is in the Prestige Plus format and will take Batman into the Gotham below Gotham City, one that is a living nightmare, populated by twisted mirrors of our Gotham denizens, fueled by the fear and hatred flowing down from above.
I'm pretty excited for this, Drew. So it's the guy that's writing and drawing this is the one who drew the Aquaman Andromeda series that we both really enjoyed. Obviously, Ron V was the writer on Aquaman, and I think I speak for both of us when we quite like his writing. So I'll be curious to see this guy stand out on his own with the writing, but the artwork was phenomenal. And what I've the drawings that they've put out so far for this Batman series also look, unsurprisingly, they look phenomenal. So I'm very excited to check this out.
Yeah, his artwork will go good with a kind of a horror kind of look. So, yeah, I'm excited about it too. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our DC Comics talk.
Tune in to the Con Guys Show. Con, as in Comic-Con. are Hollywood filmmakers and superfans who cover all the news of the con universe, including the films, the TV shows, the streaming series, the experiences, and the events that fuel your fandom. If you'd find it at Comic-Con, then you'll find it here. Now in our seventh year, the Con Guy Show is a proud member of the ESO Network.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here on the ESO Network, three hosts recommend this podcast.
I recommend it.
I recommend it.
And I recommend it.
On the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, it's a slice of life as we discuss literally anything in the universe. Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here to serve all of your needs.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's, like, wild.
No pizzas were harmed in the creation of this podcast.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers. For you.
All right, let's talk The Riddler, Year 1, Number 5. Edward scribbles his thoughts, notes, and madness on pieces of ledger paper. Today, a new life begins. A new promise is made. Like you, I am reborn. My pain will be my power. It geysers out of me. It floods me with rage. I will make them pay. I will walk them to the gates of hell. Edward goes to the Caulfield hardware store and buys fertilizer using a fake ID with the name Patrick Parker. When Edward returns home, he checks online to see he has one new follower. He welcomes them to the group. Edward knows a real change is coming soon. To be continued. Now, I know that was a really short recap. But that's because this book, about 50% of it was just artwork of Edward's scribbled notes. And it was kind of cool. It was a lot of information to read through because I actually took the time to read through it all. I found it fascinating.
Oh, I agree. It was definitely read heavy, but it was just giving a ton of depth and really expanding, you know, your kind of understanding of his psychosis and what he's going through mentally. It was incredible. And again, like you said, the summary doesn't really do justice to what this comic was because it was a deep dive into the mind of Edward this episode, or at this issue, I should say. It was so good, Drew. And I like that the fact that, so it was very text heavy, but they did it in a way that I didn't feel like I was just reading a book. And that's not to say that, let me be clear when I make that criticism of some comics, it's not that reading a book is bad, it's that that's a different medium, and a comic should be kind of getting that balance right. I thought this still got that balance right, because yes, it is very text-heavy, but they're portraying it in a way that you're reading, you're like, it's like you're physically looking at the journal, because there are objects that are taped on, and it's all pen, you know, just him scratching with his pen, and it was still the visual experience was more than just reading the text. Right, it was greatly enhanced by how they were portraying his journal. It wasn't just a giant text box.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing about it was it wasn't just a bunch of text boxes you're reading. It was actually in the artwork. You were seeing like an actual picture of his journal or of his because it basically what he did is it took a bunch of accounting papers and just scribbled stuff on them. That's what it was.
Yeah,
but it was
some of the notes would evolve. Like you saw the slow evolution of him trying to figure out what to call himself before he settles. And you can see one page he picks out the Riddler, and then he gets more confident with each page using that name. And the question mark motif starts to pop up sooner than that, and expands and expands. Like it's just again, it was just the visual experience of the comic is a major part of why this issue is so good. The writing is phenomenal, but it really is brought to that next level by visually seeing, like you're reading his craziness, right? But then you're seeing it manifest on the page. Like he's already kind of not in great control, right, at the beginning, but that journal gets more and more crazy as the issue goes on.
It does, and it's hard to describe the visuals of it, but you can see the madness on the paper. And how he's bouncing around between different topics and wonderings about things, and his mind's, you know, it's just out there. So, very interesting. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Batman the Brave and the Bold. The first story we had in this is Batman the Winning Card Part 2. When Captain Jim Gordon and the Gotham PD fail to save a man from the Joker, Batman sets up a sting operation to capture the elusive villain. Second story was called Stormwatch, Down with the Kings Part 2. Stormwatch goes to Puerto Rico to investigate a black sludge that may be tied to the Dead Sea Blade, a blade that is capable of bringing Atlantis to its knees, and Bones wants that sword. The next story was called Superman, Order of the Black Lamp, Part 2. A decoder ring comes to the Daily Planet with a secret message, Save Me. Superman tracks its origin to Mushi Kush, one of the tallest mountains in the world. There, Superman discovers an underground city and one Hop Harrigan. The last story we had in this issue was called All Things Considered, and this was by Joel Jones. Batman is wounded, but gets patched up by Alfred. Unfortunately, it will leave a scar. This wasn't much of a story, but we had some great black and white artwork.
I agree. The last one was, it was much more of a showcase of Joel Jones' artwork. It was a little bit of a story there. I mean, you sort of taking it like a sort of a highlight reel of seminal moments in Batman's life, but which was nice, but really, I mean, it was really there for the sort of visual treat of Joel Jones' artwork, and it did not disappoint in that regard. The story was fine, but that wasn't really the point. Visually incredible. I mean, it was a really, I'm a big fan of her artwork, and I very much enjoyed that last little bit. The first story, though, Drew, oh my gosh, I am loving that story.
I know, I think it's one of the best Joker stories we've had for a long time. I thought this was better than the War of Joker and Riddles.
It's definitely a different Joker, right? What I like is, I will say, there is a similarity in his portrayal for both Jokers, in that Tom King, one thing I like about the way Tom King writes the Joker is that he doesn't try to make the Joker likable or excuse anything that the Joker does, right? Like what King does is he is very straightforward in how brutal and horrible the Joker is. And that's true in both this story that we're reading and in The War of Jokes and Riddles. Joker is awful in both. The difference is that we're getting Batman at the beginning, right? And Joker we're sort of retelling those early Golden Age Joker appearances from a new lens. Whereas The War of Jokes and Riddles is a Joker who's been around for a while and is, at least in that story, had kind of lost his zeal, so to speak, right? Like that he's not laughing during most of that story. And so you're getting, it's interesting, Drew, because I do think that his approach to the character is the same, but you're seeing, in a sense, a Joker still in it, like, you know, up and coming and in his prime, not tired yet. And then with the War of Jokes and Riddles, you're getting a very different portrayal of the Joker. But I really like both. Again, I like a writer who understands that the Joker is a villain and just is like, and understands what that means, right? Like, the Joker is Batman's greatest nemesis, and Batman is supposed to be a paragon for good. Now, not a perfect being by any means, right? But a paragon for good, then Joker's got to be the opposite of that. That it's not just, you know, oh, well, he's really funny and haha, you kind of like him, right? Like, what I like is that King doesn't try to make you like him. Like, he has the humor, but he's a horrific villain. And I mean, he does some just atrocious things in these past two issues.
He has. And I'm glad they're not teaming him up like we saw recently.
Yeah.
We also had the Stormwatch story, which, I don't know, I wasn't really interested in it last issue, but I was more interested in this issue. And maybe that's because we spent more time with the characters and got into an interesting investigation. I don't know. I was more intrigued with this time.
I agree completely with you, Drew. I had the same reaction. I enjoyed this issue's installment a lot more. I was a lot more interested than I was in the first one. And I like that they kind of just got into it, right? Like, I understand the struggle, I think, with the first issue, Drew, is that they're trying to introduce the team, right? But they don't have a true full issue to do that. And so it's mostly just jammed with introducing characters, which does not make for a particularly compelling story. But I think one of the things that worked in this issue is that that's done for the most part. Obviously, they're going to continue character building, but that part's done, so they just actually tell a story. And the story itself was entertaining enough that I was starting to get into it. So I think that's the big difference between the first two. This one actually had time to tell a real story and not just set everything up.
Then we had the Superman Order of the Black Lamp story, which, I don't know, it feels weird for a Superman story.
Yeah, I know. I was intrigued with how they were writing it, where it was Superman sort of writing. My understanding, Drew, is that he's writing back to Bruce, was how I interpreted it.
No, Clark. He's writing back to Clark Kent.
Oh, Superman's writing to Clark Kent?
Yeah, he's writing it to Clark Kent because Clark can't go to wherever this place is. So they've...
Oh, I understand. Thank you.
So Superman is taken on that. And Superman's writing his experiences back to Clark Kent so Clark can write the article for the Daily Planet.
I understand. I did find that framing device interesting, though, Drew. You know, sort of we're getting Superman writing in the past tense as we're seeing it play out in the, quote, present, so to speak, visually. That was sort of interesting. You kind of got the juxtaposition between what he was writing and what we were visually seeing. But I only got so interested. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, that writing technique intrigued me enough, but what was going on wasn't super interesting. And so I was kind of like, I don't know. It was okay. I thought it was, it kind of sticks out, I think, comparatively to some of the other stories because it's just sort of okay, but it's really not a bad story. And I am intrigued, like the twist at the end has me intrigued to see what happens next, but I would be lying if I said I was blown out of the water by it.
And I have to agree with you. I thought it was just okay too. I mean, it had an interesting twist at the end. We have this guy that should be older than he is. He's still young. We got this underground mountain city. I'm not sure what's up with that. So there's a little bit of mystery to it. But I'm with you. The storytelling is interesting with Superman writing back to Clark. Like you said, he's writing it in the past tense and we're seeing it happen. And that's interesting in itself, but doesn't quite compare to the other stories we had in it, which I thought were a little better. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Tim Drake, Robin number 10. Robin Tim Drake wakes up after being attacked by chaos monsters in Batwoman's apartment. He is in some sort of maze. Gotham Arena. Bernard is knocking on the door to Tim's boat, but he is not answering. Pi comes by and tells Bernard that he thinks Tim could possibly be having an affair with Robin. Bernard snickers because he knows the truth. Bernard asks around about Tim to the people of the marina, but nobody knows what has happened to Tim. Robin makes his way through the maze until he comes upon his father. Tim gives his father a hug and then is shoved away. It is a hallucinogenic gas that is causing Tim's vision. It is one of the chaos monsters, and they want Tim to join their cult. Robin finds Batwoman tied to an altar. He is given a choice to join the cult. Instead, Tim offers himself up as a sacrifice in place of Batwoman. Bernard visits Darcy in the hospital. Steph and Cass come to visit while Bernard is there. Bernard tells the girls that Tim is missing. Next, Bernard goes to Detective Williams, who states that Tim can take care of himself. Desperate for help, Bernard creates a makeshift bat signal with his flashlight and uses shadow hands. Batman answers the call. Bernard tells Batman that Tim is in trouble. Tim is drugged, and Batwoman is still on the altar when Bernard comes charging in to save Robin. Bernard gives Robin a big hug. Bernard has brought the Bat family as well as Tim's Marina family, and they all come together to save Tim. The end. Oh my gosh, Cletus.
I'll let you take this one.
Oh man, I had several issues with this. Let's start off with the number one thing that's ridiculous. The bat signal with the flashlight and shadow hands. Yeah, like Batman's gonna answer that call. Gosh. That was one of the many issues I had with this. We had Bernard knocking on Tim's boat door. Of course, he wasn't answering. Pi comes by and tells Bernard that he thinks Tim's having an affair with Robin. And I'm glad they didn't do something stupid with that. We just had Bernard snicker at it because he knows the truth. He knows Tim's a Robin. And as far as we've gotten in this, it's getting to the point where it's kind of ridiculous that Bernard hasn't brought it up to Tim. The other thing I thought was ridiculous was bringing everybody to rescue Tim. Now, I can understand Bernard bringing the Bat family, but everybody from the Marina family? Come on, let's give up Tim's secret identity, why don't we? I don't know, it was just, I didn't really care for this. Plus the fact that we have to talk about Tim's having issues with his father. We've moved past this a long time ago. Them readdressing it here, I was like, I wasn't really feeling it. There, you know, the story was kind of indicating that Robin didn't know who he was, but I don't agree with that. He's known who he was for a long time. Now, him coming out is new to him, but the rest of his identity is not.
Yeah, but I have to say, they've leaned really hard this entire run, and really beyond just this comic, that Tim's just now figured out who he is and ignoring, what, 20, 30 years of stories. I understand that this is a new addition to who he is as a character, and I'm fine with that, but I agree with you, Drew, where it's frustrating in that, like, the way this story constantly, all 10 issues of this have constantly been like, I don't know who I am. It's like, I mean, I understand coming to terms with your newfound sexuality. That I totally get. I totally understand, but Drew, there are hundreds of Tim Drake stories. Surely he has an idea of who he is beyond his sexuality, right? Like I think a lot of people would argue that want stories like this, want characters to be defined beyond just that also. Yeah, so that was a fair criticism. I thought this was an awful comic. The story was so dumb. Tim has no plan and is completely helpless, which is Tim not having a plan is, he's not the Robin for that story, Drew. That feels like a fundamental lack of understanding of the character, personally. And then, like you said, them bringing the whole gang to go save Robin, like you said, that I don't know how Tim's secret isn't out of the bag there. Obviously, Bernard knows, but everybody who goes, Bernard has been pitching it as, I think Tim is in trouble. And so he gets the whole Marina to go, and Batman allows it? Batman allowing civilians to show up that's incorrect, Drew. That's just wrong. That's not what happens.
And Bernard wouldn't be charging in first either. I guarantee that.
I can believe Bernard wanting to go, and I can believe him trying to recruit the Marina to go, because it wouldn't occur to him that that's a stupid thing to do in terms of, like, Tim's identity, right? Because he's too focused on saving Tim. I get all of that, but it's the immediate inclusion of not just Bruce, but the entire Bat family. You don't need... Drew, they're just going to get in the way. The only thing that can happen with bringing people in from the Marina is that they die. You have the whole Bat family showing up. It's unnecessary. And then the villain gets away briefly just in time for Tim to be able to take him down because it's his book. Drew, I mean, it was just incredibly lazy story writing. I'm pretty sure this is the final issue. It's what it read like to me. And it read like, I don't really know how to wrap this up, so I'm going to take every single loose plot thread that I have dangling and try and wrap it up in one issue. And what you got is a tangled knot. You got exactly what would happen if you try to just mash it and fix everything all in one issue. They don't technically resolve. Obviously, you can infer that Tim understands that Bernard knows now, right? That can be inferred from the story, but they don't. They still don't actually confirm that in this comic, which is wild, Drew.
Yeah, Now, this is the last issue, so this series is done, which I'm kind of glad about, because as you can see with this last issue, it just went in the pooper. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Green Arrow number 3. Oliver Queen and Leanne arrive in the 31st century to find Oliver's son, Connor Hawk, with the Legion of Superheroes. Roy and Dinah are back on Earth in the present, battling against Peacemaker and Peace Wrecker. Roy and Dinah just want to talk to Count Vertigo about Waller. Peacemaker makes a deal with Roy. His badass bullets against Roy's stupid arrows. A shooting contest. If Roy wins, he gets 7 minutes to talk to Vertigo. If Peacemaker wins, Roy and Dinah leave, plus he gets bragging rights. Several minutes later, Roy and Dinah have a conversation with Count Vertigo. Vertigo tells them that Green Arrow didn't come back with the Justice League, but he's still alive. Waller just doesn't know where or when. Back in the future, Brainiac 5 tells Connor, Oliver, and Leanne that they all have been implanted with a device in their necks. Removing it could activate another teleportation. The device is linked to a dark energy teleporter. Oliver activates a message on the dark energy teleporter. It is a future version of Oliver who states that his family caused an event called the Great Disaster that kills billions of people. Old Ollie makes a deal with someone so he can go back in time and take some preventative measures. He made it so none of their family could ever be together. Remember that you can never go home. Leanne argues that the message is crap and they should go home. Oliver gives in and decides they are going home. Suddenly, a Green Lantern appears and tells Ollie that wasn't what they agreed to. But it's not a Green Lantern, it's Parallax. Welcome back to the 1990s. Come on, really, Parallax? Come on, Williamson.
What a stupid issue, Drew. I just can't stand his writing. I don't even really want to get into it. I really just cannot stand Williamson's writing. And it's just like every time we read a new issue, I'm like, maybe I'm just being hard on the guy and I just haven't found the right combo of character and plot with him. But like every story we read, no matter what the character or what the genre or plot is that he's going for, the same urges that he always puts into his writing just drive me bonkers, Drew. I just like the unnecessary pulling in of other characters for the big twist endings of comics, the overwrought melodrama that you get. I just, all of it, Drew, is so dumb. I cannot stand his writing, and it drives me bonkers that DC has invested so heavily in him being one of their top writers.
What's the deal? Is that supposed to be Hal Jordan Parallax? I couldn't tell.
It has to be. It has to be, Drew.
But why?
I mean,
how?
Agreed. It has to be, though, because that's because they're playing on the whole Zero Hour storyline, right? With Hal becoming Parallax and Ollie being a major part of the conclusion to that story. Is Williamson implying that Hal becomes Parallax again in the future? And then obviously he's going to strong arm people into following that plot line, because again, he has strong sway on what DC is doing right now, to put it lightly. I don't know. The only thing that I liked out of this issue, Drew, is I liked the idea of putting Connor Hawk in the future personally, because it's a little less messy for making him part of the Legion. I know is certainly a change to the character, but it kind of works in that it's a good way to kind of bury a character. You know what I'm saying, Drew? Like, oh, he's back. Connor Hawk exists again, but it'd be really sloppy to have him in the present, so we're just going to kind of shuffle him off into the Legion. I like that idea. I'm sure Williamson has other plans with that, but I liked the idea of like sort of, I thought it was smart, Drew, when they put John on the Legion also. And of course, they had other ideas with that, which was frustrating. But I liked the same thing where you have these characters where it's hard to have both John and Clark in the same time. So you essentially have two Supermans. So how do you fix that? Well, put John in the future, right? I liked that same thing, that idea. You put Connor in the future, that works. Now, is that going to stick? Probably not, right? But I like the idea of that solution, but I don't trust that that's what Williamson's really going with.
Yeah, I doubt it either. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Action Comics 1056. Superman and the Super Family is battling against Cyborg Superman. Tracy Corbin, Metallo's sister, has been remade into a machine like her brother and is under Cyborg Superman's control. Cyborg Superman still blames Superman for the death of his wife and goes after the twins as a way to punish Superman. The Eradicator informs Superboy that if he uses his tactile telekinesis to disrupt Cyborg Superman's signals, they will be able to face him alone. When Cyborg Superman realizes what Superboy is doing, he orders Tracy Corbin to attack him. Steel is able to stop her. When Tracy fails him, Cyborg Superman attacks her. Metallo loses it and puts down Cyborg Superman. Cyborg Superman's body is destroyed, but his mind is still in the Phantom Zone. Back at Steelworks Tower, Tracy and John Corbin are given skin to cover their metallic bodies. They are given a second chance by Superman, but it's going to take a while for Tracy to recover mentally. That night, at the Blue Earth headquarters, their leader, a woman, states that this time tomorrow, Superman will be a mass murderer. To be continued this September with Shattered City. And next month, Metropolis descends into darkness in Night Terrors. We also had Home Again Part 6. Several years ago, far from Earth on the planet Paloon, young John Kent is being held prisoner in a cell made of reinforced lead walls, at least a foot thick. Superman flies into space and uses a teleportation portal arranged by Gliana to arrive at Paloon. As soon as Superman arrives, he demands to know where John is. Gliana replies that he is in one of 120 lead cells buried around her world. Gliana tells Superman that if he puts out the fires of rebellion on her planet for good, then he and John can go free. If Superman refuses, then with the snap of her fingers, John's cell will go boom because she's rigged it with explosives. Superman uses his heat vision to create a trench around Gliana's castle. Superman is trying to buy time while he locates John. In his cell, John tries pounding on the side of the lead wall, trying to get his father's attention. When Gliana discovers what John is doing, she removes the oxygen from John's cell, and he passes out. The last story we had in this issue was called Engineer of Tomorrow Part 3. Steelworks HQ, CEO John Henry Irons' office. Mr. Terrific tells John Henry that he is his reality check. The two battle and then have a laugh about it. Michael Holt is a silent partner and investor of Steelworks. Michael Holt is here to learn more about John Henry as a person and not the hero Steel. Nat warns her uncle that Amalgam is in the building and her suit is running low on reserve power. John Henry battles Amalgam with his hammer but without his suit. A few minutes later, the news reports that John Henry Irons, not Steel, captured the assailant known as Amalgam. Breaking news is announced as the city's board reveals that Steelworks has been awarded the city planning contract for Metropolis. Nat asks who sent Amalgam. John Henry states he knows who, and this is just the beginning. To be continued in Steelworks number 1, which we've already read, so...
Yeah, they did not time that well.
Nope.
What a dumb story, Drew. What was the point of that?
I don't know. They're trying to make Michael Holt look like he was an antagonist or villain or something, and it just didn't work. It didn't work at all.
He just shows up to punch his friend in the face, and they laugh like, ha, 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 good thing you showed up. Glad to have punched each other in the face, old chum. And then, what? Drew, what? How do you write that scene and be like, yeah, this makes sense. This is really good writing. I'm a professional.
I don't know, man. It was not a good story.
But it was like so obviously stupid. I couldn't believe that someone wrote that story and was like, yeah, this works. This is good.
And then editorial let it go through.
That's what I'm saying, Drew. Multiple people had a chance to be like, this is really stupid. We could do literally anything else with these two characters. Literally anything else would be less dumb than him just showing up and being like, I'm gonna punch you in the face now, and be like, ah, yes, I'm glad you did that, friend. I just don't understand how multiple people had a chance to say no to that. I know it's a backup story, Drew, but I do feel like DC's standards for what is good enough for a backup story is very low. Because we've gotten some very good backups, but we've also gotten some really dumb ones.
Totally agree. I didn't care for the main story of this issue that much, honestly.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was a little surprised, Drew, because I had been enjoying the Metallo story, also Cyborg Superman, but it felt kind of hollow. You know, I don't know. It wasn't really clear, like, what the next part of the story was either. You know what I mean? It felt like that was supposed to be a relatively big conclusion, and it didn't really feel that way to me. Like, it was not satisfying enough to feel like a big climax.
No, it didn't. It just kind of, I don't know, it just wasn't, it was disappointing is what it was.
I agree.
I think the best story in this issue was the Home Again story with John and Superman. And honestly, not much happened in that story. But I don't know. It was still interesting. One of the things that I didn't put in my notes was, for some reason, we had to have this clip back on Earth with Lois and Doombreaker that didn't even need to be in the story. I thought we could have just left that out because it didn't even serve any purpose. Except to remind you, hey, there's Lois back on Earth. All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week. Detective Comics 1073. The Orgam place explodes. Oracle contacts everyone to locate where they are. Nightwing was able to get everyone out before the whole thing went down. Cass reports in, letting Babs know she got out of the tunnels. She found more explosives in the area, but those didn't go off. She is now tracking the Asmer. Jim Gordon calls Babs, reporting in that it is pandemonium in Gotham. Jim wants to know where Batman is. Oracle tells him she's been unable to contact him. Below Orgam Place, Batman states he was prepared. He knew about the reinforced tunnels and that they would withstand the explosion. Batman also states he knew there was some deranged plan. There always is. Batman knows the man behind the mask is Arzen. And Arzen states that Batman will die tonight in more ways than one. The Serpent broadcast to Gotham, letting them know that Batman was behind the bombing of Orgam Place, and Gotham needs to move forward without Batman. At the clock tower, Oracle is visited by Arclight of the Vigil. He tells Oracle that the Eye of the Serpent, the Orgam Woman, her mask gives her the power of suggestion, a mass hypnosis of sorts. Coupled with the Thumulus engine, it can shape and sway whole cities. Babs calls Jim Gordon, who apparently is unaffected by the hypnosis because he's been poisoned, drugged, hypnotized, jokerized, and brainwashed too many times over the years. Jim states he'll try to get the network back up. Jim snaps Montoya out of her brainwashing first. Batman is fighting Arzen and winning until suddenly Arzen bulks up with some sort of energy like he's Bane or something. Arzen beats Batman down and then injects him with Asmer. The Asmer allows Barbados to attack Batman's mind. To be continued. We also had a backup story in this. Things That Must Die Part 2. Prince Arzen kneels before his dead trainer, Asmin, who was just killed by Ra's al Ghul's assassins. The assassins warn Prince Arzen that they will take his head for Ra's al Ghul's will. The boy flees back to the castle and the queen's men come to his aid. The queen rushes Prince Arzen safely back into the castle. The queen's men bring back two of the three assassins, but one is still on the loose in the garden. Prince Arzen grabs a lantern off the wall and throws it into the garden, setting it on fire. The Gaia tree that Prince Arzen planted with his father burns as well as the rest of the garden. The last assassin is burned to death as well. Prince Arzen is training with swords when his mother interrupts with a present. It is a music box made from the wood harvested from the Gaia tree. Prince Arzen states he will listen to it as he trains. The queen is told that the families of the men who died in the garden have been silenced, and no one shall know who hired the men that attacked her son. End.
I really enjoyed the conclusion to the backup story, Drew. It obviously confirmed what we were extremely suspicious of, that it was really the mom behind the attack. A very satisfying conclusion to that story. I liked the main issue, Drew, but less happened than what I was expecting. Like, we got the big fight between Arzan and Batman, but not a lot came out of it. I don't know. I was surprised at how little it felt like the plot moved forward.
I agree with you on that. It didn't feel like it moved forward very much. And I think that's due to the fact that we spent a lot of time communicating with the Bat family. You know, we talked with Nightwing. We talked with Cass. We talked with Jim Gordon. And, you know, we kind of bounced back and forth with what was going on between everybody. And the fight between Batman and Arzan didn't last that long. And Batman had the upper hand until Prince Arzan powered up, basically. And then he was able to overtake Batman enough to get the asthma in him, which we saw caused Barbados to enter his mind. But one thing I was wondering was, why does it take the asthma for Barbados to attack Batman mentally? You would think if Barbados wanted to attack Batman directly, he'd just do it.
I don't know. We've seen Barbados pop up multiple times, Drew. It felt like he saw an opportunity to offer a deal with the devil, so to speak, that Batman was down and was like, hey, water's looking mighty fine, isn't it? Right? That's what it felt more like, a attack of opportunity to me, Drew. Because we've been seeing that pop up. One thing that was the one takeaway I had from this is that obviously the buildup between the Orgums and the Bat family has been the focus, right? It's been the focus of the story. But Barbados has sort of been lurking underneath all of that. And it makes me wonder if that's actually Romvi's endgame. Is you're focusing so much on the surface conflict that you're missing Barbados slowly but surely kind of getting his claws in.
That could very well be. And it's even possible that the Orgams are Barbados' chess pieces, sort of, to wear Batman down for his attack.
Maybe. What's interesting is that Barbados protects Bruce, though, too. Right? He offers Bruce the deal. Bruce says no. And then he's like, all right, well, I'll hold off the asthma for a little bit for you. Which is interesting to me, Drew, because to me that feels like Barbados values the potential, and I'm sure in his mind, inevitability of claiming Bruce enough to protect him, even though at the moment it doesn't directly benefit him in any way. I thought that was an interesting plot point.
Well, we've seen what Barbados can do with Bruce, or what he's done with Bruce in the Dark Multiverse.
Yeah, I really don't want another one of those stories, though.
I don't either.
I know Ron V's take would be a lot different, but I am so, oh my gosh, Drew, I'm so meddled out. I know it's been a couple years now, but I'm still just exhausted by that story.
You know, I have a DC deck building metal game that's fun to play.
That's fair. I could do that, Drew, but we read so many pointless tie-ins, and it had two events. They did two metal events. Oh, man. It was too much.
All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Superman and Lois.
What you gonna do, brothers and sisters, when thousands of geeky fans descend on Atlanta for 5 days and nights of the grandest con of them all? You can prepare by training, eating your vitamins, saying your prayers, and checking out the Dragon Con Report each and every month leading up to the show. Watch or listen and let Dragon Con Mania run wild on you!
I love that Star Trek does what adventure programs do. It's fun characters going on adventures wearing colorful outfits, but it tries to be more than that. It tries to say something more about humanity and tries to encourage us to be better people.
I love that it gives a really positive and really hopeful view of the future.
I like that you never know what you get with Trek, from Captain Pike to Picard to Captain Proton.
I like the Ferengi.
Earth Station Trek, a show where we talk about Star Trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
we're back. Let's talk Superman and Lois, Season 3, Episode 12, Injustice. Lex Luthor is released from prison after 2 decades. Clark doesn't seem worried, but Lois knows that Lex Luthor is coming for them. George Jr. thinks that whoever saved him and Sarah is their age. Jr. has given an interview with Janet from the Daily Planet. Because he is being irresponsible with powers and bragging about it at school, Jordan is grounded from using his powers in public. Clark asks him to turn in his suit. Mr. Cushing starts treating Jonathan different at the firehouse because his dad is Superman. Jonathan just wants to be one of the guys with no preferential treatment. The Smallville Samaritan, the next great superhero, article is posted by the Daily Planet. In a flashback sequence, Lex Luthor meets with the warden, Warren Ellis, after he is beat up in prison. Lex has the warden call home to find out his wife has been taken and his son would be killed in the next 5 minutes if the warden doesn't do as Lex tells him. A tornado hits Smallville. Sam is driving on the road when he comes across panicked people standing on the road. Sam gets the people under the bridge. Superman shows up and takes care of the tornado. A few minutes later, Jordan shows up and stops Sam's SUV from being sucked up into the tornado. Seeing his costume, Jordan puts it on and helps Superman with the tornado. Jordan lands in plain sight of the people of Smallville. They are all pulling out their phones and taking pictures with him. Sam is not happy. Superman shows up a few minutes later. He is not happy either. Lex Luthor shows up at the Kent farm. Lex tells Lois he wants her to retire. He never wants to read her words again. Clark tells Luthor to leave, and Lois adds, and never come back. Lex replies, then you better retire. In another flashback, Lex Luthor is ready to have dinner and is using an inmate as a chair as he enjoys a glass of wine. The rest of the inmates are standing at attention in front of their cell doors. In the present, Otis picks up Lex from the Kent farm. Otis tells Lex that Bizarro is alive. They travel to Bruno's secret lair. Bizarro attacks Otis.
I really enjoyed their portrayal of Lex in this, Drew. I will say I am unsure of with this being the penultimate episode of the season. I think I don't know how that wraps up this season well, Drew. It does feel like we're starting a new arc. This feels more like if there were like 6 or 7 episodes left, it would make more sense. I want to be clear. I really liked the episode, but there is a single episode left, and I don't know how you wrap that up, you know, in a way that feels like a complete arc. I feel like last episode was the end of the arc, in a way.
I totally agree with you, because that's what it felt like to me, too. Last episode was the last of the Bruno Mannheim arc, and this started a new story. I agree with you. I'm really invested in this Lex. He's different from what we've seen before. This is a brutal Lex.
Very brutal.
And the way he took over that prison, and at the end where we see him sitting on the inmate with everybody standing at attention, he was in charge of that prison. He took it over. Very, very interesting. And honestly, Lex could have left at any time he wanted to. If he really wanted to. And the way we saw him, he walked on foot from that prison all the way to the Kent farm.
Yeah.
So it shows what kind of Luthor this is.
Yeah. Yes, a very brutal Luthor. We got the same kind of chess master we've seen. Like, John Cryer, I thought, had that same chess master part to his character, but, and obviously the same penchant for evil, obviously, but in a much more brutal fashion.
John Cryer's Lex Luthor was more showy.
Yes.
This Lex Luthor is, he's more to the point. He doesn't have all that flaz and flair. He's just gets it done.
I agree. No frills. It is a no frills Lex. This is what's going to happen. You can do it or not. If you don't, this is what's going to happen. And it's just, he's very matter of fact. The very, very strong portrayal of Lex. And I want to be clear, I'm just like you, Drew. I'm really interested in this story. I just question why it's at the end of this season. I don't really want to complain about that, though, because I don't think next season's going to look good. in all likelihood. So I guess at least get two good episodes out of this story.
I got to tell you, Cletus, I was worried going into this episode because I knew the Bruno I could just tell the Bruno Mannheim story wrap last episode. And I was wondering, you know, why didn't we end the season there? I went into this episode worried that it wasn't going to be very good, and honestly, I was blown away by how good it was. We continued Lois's story with her cancer and finishing that off with her surgery. We had Lex Luthor, we had a very strong Lex Luthor in this episode, and then all the drama that was going on with the kids and stuff. It was a lot better an episode than I thought it was going to be. And I know you're worried about the last episode, but as good as the rest of the season has been, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that that last episode is going to be good. And I have a feeling it's going to have a big cliffhanger.
Oh, I have no doubt about the quality of next episode, Drew. It's next season is my...
Yeah. Well, you know, if we keep these writers on, we could have a good season. What it looks like with the cast.
The cast and the set and the visual budget. Effects. The writing is honestly the least of my worries, Drew. It's the resources available to execute the story they want to write is where the concern is coming from. I thought one thing of interest to note too was the absence of the Irons in this. Makes me wonder if that's they're not going to be regulars next season, and if they don't, it wouldn't be shocking if they don't come back at all, because they'd have to take a pay cut and they may not want to do that, the actors, for that. So it was interesting. I thought with this episode, and I wonder if we'll see it more next episode, the sort of shrinking of the cast a little bit already.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, it's just unfortunate.
Interesting, and this is the thing that in a sense frustrated with this episode, because it's so good and it set up such interesting storylines, is like the Jordan story, like that has the potential to be really, you could really go in a lot of different directions with that, and you could potentially have the kid really spiral, you know, where to the point where like Superman might have to take him in to contain him because they have no other options. That story feels like it could be on the table, except it's probably not, right?
Yeah, it's probably not, but that could be a direction they could go.
It's just one of those things with the amount of time left, I was like, man, the Jordan story feels like it could have a lot of potential, but I'm curious how much that storyline is going to end up paying off. Obviously it's going to be a focus going into next season, but I wonder how big of a plot line that's actually going to be, because it requires a lot of other cast members, Drew. That's sort of the problem.
Yeah. The other thing that could happen is Jordan's identity could get revealed. If that happens, Superman's identity could get revealed. If Lex gets wind of that, that targets the whole family.
I had a sort of like a pit in my stomach as I was watching Drew. I was like, is Jordan going to slip up and that's how Lex figures it out, is because Jordan's being dumb. And that does feel on the table to me, Drew.
It does to me too. I was a little worried about that, and it could still happen. That could present a big problem to the Kent family, especially with Lois and Jonathan not having powers. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm very curious to see how this season's going to wrap up.
Agreed.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so Drew, I didn't realize the DC documentary. I don't know if maybe I just wasn't paying attention. I thought it was going to just be one thing, but it's actually hour-long episodes. So I'm one in. I have not finished it, though. But I am enjoying it. It is on Max. We talked about it a few episodes ago that it was coming out, and that might just be me, and I wasn't paying attention. I was under the impression it was going to be a movie documentary, but it is more of an installment, and a really good start so far.
Yeah, you just weren't paying attention. Yeah, I knew it was coming out soon. I haven't had a... And I figured it was out already, but I haven't had a chance to watch it. For my shout out, I'm going to shout out about my adventures with Superman, because I got the time to watch it this past week. Now, I've only watched the first three episodes. I didn't get to watch episode four when it came out, so that's still on my plate to watch. But I'm almost caught up with the current episodes. It's really good. I'm really enjoying it. I like the mix of humor with it.
I'm on. I think four is how many they've put onto Max so far. And I think the show airs on Thursdays or Wednesdays, and then it goes on to Max on Fridays. So I'm through the first four episodes, and I'm really enjoying the show. I'm very excited that it got a second season.
I am too. And I just have fourth episode I haven't watched yet, but I'm going to get that watched before the new one comes out on Friday. Then of course I'll watch the one that comes out on Friday. I'm enjoying it too. It's a fun series. I was surprised, and it being a little more anime-like, it didn't bother me at all. So I'm enjoying it.
No, it's definitely not that. I agree, Drew. It's got the heavy anime influence, but it is not an anime, and that is for me personally, my subjective taste is the balance that I want. I'm not crazy about many anime, and so the fact that it's influenced by it, but is still very much its own thing, is, for me, that's the right balance.
All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-455-8411. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Also, check out our new newsletter that's out now. You can go to our website, earthstationdcu.com, sign up for the newsletter there. You can find out what comics and stuff we'll be reviewing on the episodes. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Adventures of Superman, John Kent, Night Terror's First Blood, Night Terror's Batman, Night Terror's Black Adam, Night Terror's Poison Ivy, Night Terror's Ravager, Night Terror's The Joker. And of course, the season finale of Superman and Lois. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Wonder Woman! Wonder Woman! All the world is waiting for you, and the power you possess in your satin tights. Fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network. Your station for all things geek.